Hello and welcome to 20 Tim Minutes, a podcast that focuses on mental health in a serious but yet humorous way. Listen as I interview a wide variety of guests where we show our support as well as sharing our own personal struggles and stories with mental health. I am your host, Tim McCarthy, and now it's time to talk about it. Hey, what's going on, everybody? You are tuning into another episode of 20 Tim Minutes. I am your host, Tim McCarthy. Today, I'm happy to have on female comic who is a paid regular at the Comedy Studio in LA. Her last album, Please Don't Leave Me, was number one on the iTunes charts. Now has a brand new comedy album coming out on October 1st, which you can pre-order now, called Horny for Death, which is a great name. Welcome, Jessica Michelle Singleton. How the hell are you?
Oh my God, I'm great. It's great to be here. I'm so excited to be doing your podcast.
Frick yeah. We just had our rock, paper, scissors matchup and you beat me straight up 2-0.
Oh, like a bitch. You went down. I needed that. I haven't played competitive sports in a while, so that's all I had. So I was like, yeah, I took it way too seriously.
It was stone cold too. You looked me dead in the eye and you're like, dead.
Just done. Yeah, no, you can't fuck with these hands. I just got my nails done. I'm on fire.
That's a good mani. I like a good mani. What's the index finger a different color?
It is. Check this out. Okay, you guys. Okay, this is great for the audio listeners. Can you hear the glitter? They're different on each hand. I paid too much for it. Being a woman's a nightmare. Don't recommend it.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I wouldn't go that route myself.
What am I gonna say?
So I was researching you a little bit more, and when I googled your name, I looked up images. Do you know this? That the first photo that comes up is a lady by the same exact name as you who lives in Alabama. And it's
is she a
mugshot.
Black woman?
No, a white woman. Oh. It's her mugshot.
Yeah, that's definitely not me in Alabama. So no, I didn't know that. There's a lot of like when you search me on Facebook, there's a few just like young, beautiful black women with my name. And I'm like, well, what a disappointment when I show up on stage. But like, fuck, it's a mugshot. Damn, I want to find that woman and meet her.
Yeah, you gotta do a joint show.
Oh, yeah. And then she just killed
her. And I couldn't figure out why she was in jail. It was her mugshot. There was no information. So I don't know if it was a setup or what.
Weird. Yeah. Oh, man. Now this is... You don't know what you've just done to me. I took Adderall. We're going to hang up. And then I'm going to be like, I got to find this lady.
Oh, we will. We definitely will. I'll be on the case with you.
This is my serial killer documentary. And she just like got a DUI. And I'm like, after 4 years of relentless research, I found this alcoholic.
Definitely a Netflix documentary, like the one. Oh, what the fuck is the name? I'm not gonna do this right now. Go back
Making
and forth.
Murder, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. I can't believe I forgot the fucking name.
Fucking Wisconsin guy. I forgot his name. All I remember is his accent. Him going, I didn't do nothing. I'm like, all right.
And then the kid was a huge wrestling fan, and he missed WrestleMania, and it broke my heart.
That poor kid. I felt bad for. I was like, you guys are just taking advantage of this kid.
That's one of the worst stories ever.
Missing WrestleMania, what a nightmare.
You were on the Showtime documentary on the Comedy Studio.
Yeah, Comedy Store. It's
Comedy Store.
Not to like really low-key correct you, but it's a big deal. I was just like a little blip on the radar, but it was really cool getting to see that they did that. I mean, comedians are all obsessed with the history of it, so it was cool to get like, oh, do other people care about it? I don't know if they do. I know like a few of my friends watched and were like, wow, neat. But it was cool like seeing the history, and they brought in all these old guys and interviewing, because when you walk through there, you just like see photos and there's all this like history, and they talk about how like, oh, the mob used to run abortions up a tunnel out of here before this was the Comedy Store. And like, it's crazy shit, man. It was cool.
That's fantastic. Now, yeah. Your first comp, know what it was too? It's like, I'm from the East Coast. The most west I've ever been, I think, is like Arizona. So that's why I messed up. I want to go to LA so bad because it is a legendary spot.
Do you? Or are you like, these California pussies and their liberal politics and their hippie bullshit?
They scare me out there in California. Everyone just seems so relaxed. I'm so fucking tense. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, it's definitely living out there has made me way more woo-woo. But I'm still not at the level of Californians. I was the same way. I have like, even though I grew up in Alaska, I have like very East Coast energy, just like tense, let's go, like meditating. What are you gay? No.
And you do meditate, but no, let's get to that soon. I got to stop you. And you grew up in Alaska, which is mind fucking boggling that I always forget that. How was that growing up? So you go from Alaska to Florida first off, and then then somehow you end up in California because that's where you go when you become a good comic. But how was it growing up in Alaska?
It was a nightmare, dude. Like, I love coming back now, and I finally, just this trip, I'm here right now. I always come back once a year, and I say, like, I come back because I miss my friends. And this time was the first time I was like, oh, I missed, like, Alaska. It's so beautiful. But as a kid, so I moved up here in sixth grade. My mom drove us from southern Mississippi to Anchorage, Alaska. It was 13 days in a car. Three of those days, the car was driven onto this, like, ferry boat. And she's like, it's like a cruise. It's not. It's a Greyhound bus on the water. It's a nightmare. We, like, lived off of, like, tuna fish or whatever. It was, like, disgusting. And I hated it. I found out in the first, like, week of living here that I have an allergy to cold weather. I break out into hives if I get
too
cold.
Not good. That's not good.
No. It's awful. It's so dark. Like, the thing is like, I got diagnosed with depression in Alaska.
Makes sense.
But, like, yeah, no, it's like 9 months of darkness. Everyone gets depressed. But it was also, like, I didn't know at the time. I had all this, like, trauma because my dad left. My mom was very mentally ill. She's an addict. She's an alcoholic. And so it's just this, like, weird, like, combination of that and then going into, like, pure cold darkness wasn't great. I mean, I ended up, like, making friends, and by the end of living here, like, my last, like, year of high school, I finally kind of came into my own and was, like, having a little bit more fun. But it was tough, man. This is, like, you gotta have some big balls to live here.
I hate being cold. I'm in New England. I couldn't imagine Alaska. When did you get out of there? What age?
17. I graduated at 17 and was like, goodbye forever. Like, peace out. Like, just, I couldn't wait to leave. Like, I applied everywhere that was as far away as possible. I was like, if I never see a fucking snowflake again for the rest of my life. I mean, we have the highest suicide rate per capita. We have the highest murder rate because people go nuts. Like, by the time I got out of high school, I had so many dead friends. It was, like, crazy. That was my reality. So, like, going to Florida, meeting new people, and, like, having that every once in a while come up and realizing, oh, that's not normal. I just thought, like, yeah, no, everyone has, like, 10 dead friends by the time they graduate high school. And you're like, I don't know anyone who's died. And I'm
my
like,
my grandma's still alive.
I know. I'm like, all right, don't brag. But it was definitely tumultuous. It takes a lot of something.
Yeah.
Permanently.
A lot of alcoholics out there. Were you in a big city out there?
Yeah. I mean, quote big city. I was in Anchorage, which is the big city, but it's relative to, you know, actual big cities. It's like a blip on the radar, but it's about 200,000. And at the time I was like, what a big city. And then I moved to Tampa for college. Then I moved to LA and I was like, I lived in a town. I lived in a somewhat large town.
you're a cocktail of the craziest states of all time. You just went the fucking route of, like, a diamond star that you just fucked around.
It was like, I'll go anywhere as long as there's other white trash.
Yeah. It's like, dude, straight up.
Yeah, like, I literally, it's, Alaska's like the south of the north. Like, it's just like hunting, fishing, country music, which I love. But, like, who I am now, if 17-year-old me, so, like, in my John Deere tractor hat with dip in my mouth, could see me now, like, in LA, just, yeah, like, literally just pack it in, give me a pouch. Like, I thought I was, I thought I was a cowboy.
Can you do the snap?
I tried forever, and now I have arthritis, so there's, like, no way. I'm just like, I just would. I'm like, I'm so badass, and then I just, like, tap on the fucking, like, hit it on a table. It was so gross. It's where I would have it in for, like, 5 minutes and be like, I'm dizzy. Yeah. The room is spinning. But I was like, I'm hardcore. And now it's like I meditate and I'm, like, trying to eat healthy. I'm like, I'm just gonna go on a hike to, like, be in nature. The things I would call myself, I cannot say on this podcast because they will get me canceled now. we all remember the words we used in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not a slur. It just means you're a bitch. Like,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And we're like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. I don't mean anything by it. But yeah, no, it's like, what a transformation.
I can only imagine that. I can't even, like, Alaska to Florida is insane either way. Now, there's one movie that is takes place in Alaska, which I love. Which is your favorite Alaskan movie?
Oh, which is my favorite?
Yeah, like that takes place in Alaska. Mine is Out Cold.
Out Cold? Out Cold's a good one. Fuck, it's a really good one. I'm such a basic bitch. I was trying to think of the name of that Sandra Bullock one where she just like gets engaged. Is it called The Engagement?
With Matthew McConaughey? Is that it? Oh
yeah,
no,
I'm a dork. No, it's called something else. I don't know. Everyone always brings up Into the Wild, and so that's my like.
Oh, we can both take Out Cold.
I mean, fine. I don't know.
It has one of the.
Is there a rule?
There's one of the was it Jason, Jeremy? I don't know, those brothers that are fucking wild.
Yeah.
Which one, what was it? Jason and Jeremy. What are their last names?
Oh, fuck.
This is like the worst part of the conversation.
Now I'm like Googling.
You have to look it up because one's in Mallrats and the other one's in Out Cold.
Yeah, and all I'm thinking of is Jason London. Is that who it is?
No. Jeremy
I'm
London.
Thinking, I mean, all I'm thinking of is Zach Galifianakis when I think about Cold.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Then I pulled it up.
Did you snowboard? Were you fucking hip?
Dude, I tried. I sucked, man.
Damn, you were fake Alaskan.
No, I don't belong here. Like, this is like, I left and it's like, I miss it. But when I have this conversation now, I think about it because I'm like, well, what if I had stayed? And then right now I'm like, I don't belong here. Like, it's, I love my friends. I always have fun coming home. But I have friends that are like, yeah, they like ripped at hockey. I played ice hockey, but very poorly. They snowboarded. They go out, they snow machine. Which is what it's called. It's not snowmobiling, you fucking losers.
Snow machine?
Called snow machining. I mean, like, there was literally like a docuseries or maybe it was a reality show called like Sled Necks about some people call it sledding, like snow machining, but it's like that's Alaska in a nutshell is like Sled Necks.
Dude, I interviewed somebody that was on Buck Wild and they told me about Sled Necks. I interviewed.
Wait, Buck Wild is the one that was the other one that was up here, right?
No, it was in the South.
Oh, no, there was another thing called like Wild Alaska. Buck, I mean,
there was MTV, right? The one you're talking about.
Thing.
Yeah, so yeah. She was telling me that was one. I was like, that's a fucking great name. That's so funny you brought that up.
It's so great. And like, it really couldn't be more accurate to the type of person. No, it's like, I get too cold. I tried to snowboard, but I like sucked at it. I just hate it. I'm not a winter person, but I'm also not a super hot weather person. What I am is a 90-year-old Jewish man.
Yeah, you like things lukewarm.
Yeah, I'm like not too hot. Because then I went to Florida. I was like, let's get out of here. And then I like overheated and got heat exhaustion at my first football game. And I was like, I am supposed to be dead. My body does not want to be here.
You were supposed to be a stand-up comic in a nice AC room and then sweating in the middle of it.
I know, literally. And it's like sense. Only I can start sweating in a comedy club where they're blasting AC. Like,
now, you said that you had arthritis. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah, I have rheumatoid arthritis. So no one gives a fuck about it because it has arthritis in the name. Yeah. They're just like, yeah, no, my grandma's back hurts when it rains or whatever. But it's not the wear and tear version. It's autoimmune, which means, so if anyone doesn't know what that means, I'm so used to it that I like think it's second nature. But like your immune system is what keeps you healthy. You know, it fights off illnesses and mine instead fights my own body because it's fucking stupid. Like I am suicidal at a molecular level. My body's like, look, if you're not going to pull the trigger, we're going to fucking just chip you down from the inside. So it's inflammation in the joints, like whatever MS does to nerve endings where your body attacks your nerve endings. Rheumatoid arthritis is the same thing, but for joints. But like for some reason, everyone's just like, yeah, it's not a big deal, but like it's a nightmare. And, painful. I will say getting out of a state where the weather isn't so like dramatically changing makes a difference. I have that old witch thing where I can like tell when it's gonna rain in my bones. I'm like, the rain's coming. I've been more accurate than the weather app on multiple occasions and I'm like, that's fucking
meteorologists can just be wrong and keep their job.
Yeah, no, it's like, oh, just, you know, get out there and have some personality and it'll be fine. They're like, there's going to be a hurricane. You're like, what are you talking about? Like, who knows? There could be. It's nuts. It's the only job where it's like, no one cares. Like, nobody believes them. We're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's see your tits, Carol.
And they get the fakest voices in the world.
Oh, it's, I mean, all those like news voices where they're like, welcome back to KLOX. And you're like, nobody talks like that. What is like, wrong with you?
They're like, let me bring it over to Jessica. And there's always that delay too. And they're like, hey, how are you doing, Tim? Yeah, I'm on the weather.
Yeah. I'm just outside in the elements. And it's like, was this your dream?
And they have like just a fucking umbrella getting sucked by the like the rain and shit.
Blown away. Have you ever seen those like videos where there's like videos of weather people being like, it's really crazy out here. And then the people like walk by really normal in the background. Yeah. And they're like, what?
They're just hammering.
It's all acting. Yeah.
It's the worst acting in the world. It's now, the worst. Now, like, how is your everyday with that? Like, what do you take to help with that?
Well, I live on the edge. I currently don't take anything regularly, which there's some doctors who will tell you that that's not a great idea. I was on something called Plaquenil, which, funny enough, is hydrochloroquine. It's the thing that at the beginning of COVID, I don't know if you remember this, but Trump said, well, if you take this, that'll prevent you from getting it. It was just one of those like lies that came out when no one knew what was going on or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there was a bunch of like people going out and getting their doctor prescribe it. And then people who needed it couldn't get it. Like that, like there was a shortage. But I got off of it probably a few years ago. I had a surgery on my wrist because I had like a gross little cyst in there. And I had to go off of it for 10 days because you have to get off anything that thins your blood. And then I immediately went on the road and I just happened to forget it. So I was like, I guess I'm just not going to take it for a month. And then when I started it again, immediately the joint, like my joint pain came back severely. So me not being a doctor was like, I'm not going to take this. But I told my doctor and she's like, all right, well, you know, just like keep an eye on things. It's supposed to decrease your risk of like having a severe flare up. Because if you have a flare up, that can like permanently damage your shit. You get like crazy inflammation. But what it does, and a lot of medications do this, they're called DMARDs. And I wish I'd been more prepared because I can't actually tell you what that stands for. But they're immunosuppressants. So because it's your own immune system attacking you, the only way to like slow it down, because there's not a cure, is to inhibit your immune system. So like I travel all the time. This was like pre-COVID, but now with COVID, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to not have an immune system, but you know, you gotta weigh your options. I'm lucky that mine thus far, knock on wood, has been very low grade. It's like, it's increasing very slowly. And some people just like explodes and their, you know, joints get fucked up immediately. They're having, and it can affect your organs and stuff. But like, for me, it's just fluctuating pain mostly. And when it gets really bad, I'll take like ibuprofen.
Yeah.
And I go through like spells of it being bad. And a lot of times it's like at night, which is so annoying because that's when I perform. Like I'll be fine during the day. And then like 2 hours before I'm going to go on stage, all of a sudden my body turns into like a fucking rock. I'm just becoming like a human Joshua tree. And I'm like, just got, there's been nights where I have like hobbled onto the stage and been like in really? So much pain, but I'm like, I'm doing my 15 minutes for $20 in the original room at the Comedy Store. God damn it.
Throwing up gang signs with your fingers.
Literally. That's what's like literally what it looks like. And it's weird. It's like when I first got diagnosed, I went down the rabbit hole of like, what is the worst case scenario?
Yeah.
How much time will this take off of my life? And I like went crazy. I got really healthy for like 5 minutes. Got on like this special diet and it helped. But I'm fucking, I go in and out.
Yeah.
In and out of
what part of the body hurts the worst with that? Is it like your hands, knees, head, shoulders, knees, and toes?
It usually starts with, yeah, literally head, shoulders, I can't even say it. Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. It usually, they say it starts with like hands and ankles. And for me, that was true. And then like, as time goes on, it kind of starts to get into more joints. So like, I used to just be someone who's like ankles popped all the time. And it creeps people out. And my hands, like everyone can pop their fingers, but like mine just constantly do it. But it's gone from like that to like, oh, now my knees pop. And like, oh, now like my neck always pops. My hip joints pop. I have a new thing now where if I stretch too far backwards, my chest pops. And it's like, which like, I'm kind of used to it, but it's like my body's turning into like a weird, like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's like I'm a walking car accident, just crunching everywhere I go. It's so weird.
Looking like Woody from Toy Story, just like flopping just around.
Hey there, partner. And like, I mean, yeah. And I think about it all the time. Like right now I'm still like fully mobile. I'm very grateful for that. But like, oh my, what if I can't walk? Or like, and it's, I kind of like do a lot of work to not go down those holes.
Yeah, you seem very busy when I was looking at your resume here. Like you earlier, you were talking about meditation and you were talking about ADHD. How do you fucking do that? Because I can't do that.
No, you know what? It's funny. It's so funny because like I didn't think I could do it either. I was like, that's fucking crazy. And being the person I am, where I'm like very all or nothing a lot of the times, I went from never meditating to signing up for a 10-day silent meditation and just like locking myself in. Of course, all my friends were like, you can't be quiet for 10 seconds. Like, what the fuck are you, 10 days?
Wait, you were quiet for 10 days?
Yeah, not in my mind. No, my mind was like losing. I made my one woman show for, God, I hate saying one woman show. It sounds so fucking obnoxious and like no one woman show, but that's what it was at the end of the day. My one woman show, I made a one woman show about it called Codependent Arising. And there's a thing in Buddhism called Dependent Arising. But like in the show, it's supposed to be this immersive, like fake, we're all on a meditation together. It's like an hour long and I'm quietly like doing physical comedy, but there's a screen showing like what's going on in my brain. And it's just like spiraling through thoughts, but it's like everything comes, you go from like these generic, I got so much to do, what am I doing here, to like traumas come up and like all these feelings and realizations. And it was nuts. But a big part of like what I learned in that with meditation, if you're doing like 5 minutes a day, like the act of attempting meditation, even if you're like, there's too many thoughts, there's too many things going on, by sitting and like attempting to like focus on your breath, you are meditating. Like everybody thinks it's the getting to that Zen, but it's like, no, when you sit down, you're like, I'm just going to focus on my breath. And then you, all of a sudden you're like, oh, did I send that email? And then you're like, oh, I'm not focusing on my breath. Let me try to come back. That is like what you're doing. You're learning to like be aware of where your thoughts are going. And that's huge for me. Like because I don't know if you get like this, but I get for a long time, I was very attached to whatever my emotional state was. I identified with like whatever thoughts in my brain, how I feel is like how I feel forever. It's who I am. Like, and it's not like, but before I learned to meditate, if I talked to someone who had done it, like the idea of like observing your thoughts or just noticing when a feeling comes up, I was like, you sound like a fucking crackpot. That's not a thing, but it is. It's just like it's like, it's a muscle. It's like the same as if you do squats every day, eventually your butt's going to get a little bit bigger.
Damn right.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like, I mean, this is really dorky and it speaks like to my white trashiness on a deep, deep level, but I always quote this Dierks Bentley song. It's a country band, but they have a line in a song that goes like, I still go crazy. Now I just don't stay there as long, because it's like, I'll be in this like emotional spiral, you know, something's upsetting. I'm like, so, and then I go, all right, okay, wait a second. I'm like freaking out. Let's take a breath. Like, it's okay to be upset, but like, let's not catastrophize. Let's not make go worst case scenario, or like, cause I didn't know that I like lived in my emotions so much. You can really start to identify with like bad feelings and attach to them. And it's like, that's not who you are, but you can get addicted to like heavy feelings.
I need to hang out with you, cause that's all I do. I spiral constantly and I can't get myself out of that. And funny enough that you say that, you emotional attachments, because like I get so like tied up in that I lose control of everything. Like I forget to breathe.
Yeah. What? And it's a thing of like, and it's one of those things where like, there's so many of these repeated like catchphrases and things that like, you just go, whatever, fucking. And then like, but if you actively try to work on it one day, it clicks in a way, even if like you're sucking at it and the work is hard. And you're like, I feel like anytime I sit down to meditate, I have like 1 second of being aware of my breath. And it's like one day things click, like just the concept of like, I am not sad. I feel sad, but being sad is not who I am. Like, it's just a feeling I'm having, and just learning to separate, like, it's not like emotions go away. And a big part of the meditation I did, it was like based in Buddhism. I'm not really Buddhist, although the more I read on, the more I'm like, oh no, am I going to become the white lady who's a Buddhist? And I think I am. And it's like, oh God, I don't want to be that woman. But what are you going to do? Will. Acceptance. No, it's like acceptance is such a big part of it. Like so much of the suffering we put on ourselves is resisting emotions. And that like adds to your pile of anxiety when you go, I don't want to be sad. I don't want to feel like this. It's like, okay, well, you do. So like just be in it for a second. Because I really do think there's something to like purging your emotions. Like people have this instinct. We're in this culture of like, be happy, be positive. And then if someone's like, how's your day? And you're like, not great. They're like, oh, you're a psychopath. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm a psychopath. Not the guy who's like never better. And his family's like chopped up in a freezer somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, we all are taught that like sad, anger, those are negative. You should don't get angry. Don't get sad. And it's like, well, no, you're gonna like, don't, you know, act on your anger in a way that's like dangerous to people. But like, I don't know, learning to feel my emotions and realize I don't have to like have a huge reaction. I can just have them come up and like, they suck, but they dissipate faster when I allow them to come up.
I get very, when I spiral, I get so negative in a way that I have this thought where like, I take medication to try to be happier, but I'm like, is that who I'm supposed to be? Because people live before me without medication. So like, am I supposed to be sad? You know what I mean? Like, that's how bad I got. So like, yeah, the medicine and doctors are helping me. But if there wasn't them, it's like, that's who I was supposed to be. And I was very like, it's not negative, but it was like a realization that I was like, that's fucking true.
No. Yeah. No, I think about that stuff all the time. And like for a long time, I didn't even get on meds because I was like, what do we, you know, I would rather feel than like be numb. And like, I like, it's because I liked the highs, but I didn't want the fucking lows. You know, those moments when I'm like kind of hypomanic and like clean everything and I'm doing 100 things. Oh. It's like I was trying to chase that. Like, how can I just channel that all the time? Which you can't. And the higher you go, the fucking harder you fall once being, it wears off.
Being manic is such a like a fucking behind the curtain. You're like, oh, I'm doing great. And you're like, nope, fucking terrible.
Yeah, they're just like, I'm the greatest. And you're like, I lit myself on fire.
Yeah, it's cocaine like, without the coke.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Well, that's, and like I spent a lot of my like time, like when I was younger, just sort of very often in that kind of phase, to the point that everyone thinks I like, so many people are like, you do coke. And I'm like, no, I'm just like this. It's terrible for me. yeah, no, but it's, and there is sometimes with medications, like I still think the like, be aware, make sure I'm not putting a Band-Aid on a volcano, so to speak. That, like, sometimes it's like, you need just something. It's like, okay, for a little while till I'm prepared to deal with the trauma. Cause I do think you just gotta be aware of yourself. Cause I do still believe there's a thing in Western medicine where there are some people who, you know, are gonna need to be on medication forever to like function, to feel okay. And like, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think our doctors are taught like, just give them a pill. And this was the game changer for me. I went to a therapist in early 2013. And I was deeply suicidal. Like, I was like, this is it. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll do the thing they tell you to do. And I went and I was like, I'm depressed. And then she started asking about my life and like my childhood. And a licensed therapist, I make a joke about this in my act now, but I like the therapist was like, you're not depressed. You don't have depression. You've had a terrible life. This is a normal emotional response to what's going on, which obviously the joke is just like, great. Is there a pill for that? I don't fucking, you know, but like,
yeah.
But realizing that's like, oh, there are other ways to process some traumas. And the problem is everyone's so different. You don't know unless you decide to do the work and look at yourself where you're at. And either one is okay. And it's like, if what you need or want to do is meds, but like there's a lot of work that can be done, I think, to get in a better place to assess, like, is this the medication I need? Is this how I'm feeling? And like, obviously I'm not a fucking doctor. Don't try to cancel me. I'm not telling anyone to stop taking their meds, especially SSRIs. My God, don't do that.
Yeah. Just no more monkeys jumping on the bed. You know, what's funny too, is like doctors can have bad days and like, I can come in here. He's like, just take some fucking Xanax, get out of my office.
Yeah. Well, and that's like, to me is a little red flag when they're like too quick to prescribe you, especially with psychiatric stuff. It's like, well, they should get to know you a little bit and like see what's going on. Cause it's like, I mean, I know so many people who have been misdiagnosed as, you know, they have this, that, you know, bipolar, whatever. And obviously all of those things are real and legit, but then they find out like, oh, actually, no, you have PTSD and you're constantly triggered. And that's what's making you fucking spiral. Cause it's like, you have all these like traumas from childhood. That being said, like, I have a very like realist, not negative outlook on getting over trauma, because I think it's like a thing you learn to like be aware of, and like, and that goes back to meditation. And I'm not saying meditation is a cure-all, because it's not. Meditation doesn't stop me from getting triggered by things that like remind me of my past. Like the fact that I meditate has given me the ability to go, oh, I'm being triggered. Okay. Instead of like reacting at someone, you know, how fucking dare you? I go like, oh, this feeling has nothing to do with you. I got to take a minute, because like I'm freaking out and you haven't actually done anything wrong.
Yep. But I know exactly what you mean.
And it's like, and a lot, I mean, a lot of times you need the medication to have that clarity, because you're so, everyone's holes that they go into are so different. And like, it's insane. I'm just, you know.
So you're busy and crazy, which is good. I'm the same way.
I think, and I stay busy to try to like cull the crazy. Then I'm like, if I just stay productive, it's definitely, that's my addiction. Like it's easy for me to go, well, these drug addicts, not that I sit around doing that, but I have like so many addicts in my family. And I didn't know till I can't even believe I'm going to say this on the podcast. I went to a Workaholics Anonymous meeting, which is hilarious to end a meeting like that goes, keep coming back. It works if you work it. And you're like, I'm stuck in a cycle forever.
You're not like, fucking around.
No. Well, I went because I was like, I tried to go to Al-Anon. My mom's, that's constantly recommended to me. People who are in it and it works for them. I have friends that will like preach about it. I got dragged to AA meetings by my mom, like from middle school on, once she got sober. So like, I'm aware of like 12-step programs and how beneficial they can be. But I always felt like, well, I don't know. I can't find, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't feel like I'm addicted to anything. And then I was like, oh, I have the addiction that people reward, because we live in America where they're like, hustle.
Yeah.
And you're like, how do you?
You hustled the hustle.
And it's definitely like trying to, I don't know if you have like, even though that's why I'm going like, oh, 5 minutes a day, because the who I aspire to be with my self-care is drastically different than who I am. Because like, yeah, no, I'm going to meditate every day. No, I'm fucking not. I meditate maybe once a week and go, I got to get better at this, but at least I'm doing it right now.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, stop and do something that's just going to benefit my well-being. What am I, rich? No, but you know.
So we're like, we're both functioning psychopaths pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's, you know, what are you
gonna do? So that this even goes to show that even more. So you're certified in CBT?
Oh yeah. So this is crazy.
This whole thing has been crazy.
Well, the whole thing is crazy. So I know about CBT. I've had friends who talk about like cognitive behavioral therapy and how it helped them, and like helped them learn to like realize when they're overreacting, or like, I mean, I use the phrase catastrophizing, which is very like psychiatrist buzzwordy, you know, like, or like just sort of like, I mean, at the core of CBT, you're learning to see the reality of the situation instead of the fucked up lens that you like are, you react and view it from. But I was trying to find a therapist that could do that forever. And I was like, I just like not find anyone that like I vibe with, doesn't feel like I'm getting what I need. And like, like a psychopath, I was like, I'm just going to get certified in CBT so I understand what it is and how it can help me.
You have like a loophole.
Yeah. And so I did. I took like a whole like 36-hour training course, which is not the same as getting like, I'm not a licensed therapist. It's just like one little nugget that like some therapists take to then start, you know, being able to practice. But I just was like, I want to learn. And I did. But that's a very, you know what I didn't realize at the time? That's a very ADHD thing to do that I did for a lot. And I thought that there was something wrong with me. Like, what? How can because I'll go into holes where I go like, I like this thing. I'm going to learn all about it. And it's like, the next fucking however many hours are just spent like consuming. And then you're like, but I can't focus on like the 3 emails I need to send.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm the same way.
Yeah, no, I didn't, because I went to a doctor again, like a few years ago. I finally was like, you know what? I need to get on meds. Something's wrong. I was like, I'm anxious. I'm depressed. I can't get anything done. And I talked to her and I was like, I don't know what I need, which was hard for me to admit as a person who likes to think like, I've done my research. And I cannot live like this. It was like, it was getting to that point of like, I was aware enough to go, this is pre getting suicidal. This is where it starts, and it's a downward spiral, and I don't want to go down the spiral. And when I explained my life and like how I'm feeling, because I was thinking I need anxiety meds, but I also need depression meds. And she's like, I think you need ADHD meds. I think you can't focus. It's giving you anxiety. You can't get anything done. And then you're depressed. You haven't gotten anything done. And like this, I got on ADHD meds and immediately anxiety like gone when I take them. Like this, oh, I'm not going to get it done. Like, because that's what, there's too much to do. And it's like, no, it's like gone and I can just do it. And that was huge for me. But I spent so much time in the like, I'm not going to take meds. I'm just going to, because probably because of that other therapist, I was like, well, it's, I'm not depressed. I've just got to like deal with my trauma. But it's like, no, you can also need meds.
Yeah.
And like getting, finding something that like, I didn't know it didn't, so, this is somebody else's phrasing. A comedian named Brody Reed, but I loved the way he put it, is like, he took ADHD meds for the first time. And he's like, oh, I thought everyone was just walking around and it felt like there was a hive of bees constantly buzzing in your head. Like, and I'm like, oh no, that you can just, I can get to like sort of a calm without 10 days of meditation and going off the grid. That's crazy. I don't know.
I know exactly what you mean. I like that too. Now, did your therapist and doctor get annoyed with you when you make jokes?
Thankfully, no. Oh, that's good. Most of the time, they laugh. But like,
do you work on bits?
No, never in therapy. No, I take, that's the thing, is like, I take my comedy very seriously. That's actually a problem. I'm trying to learn to do less of that and just go like, just, you started because you were silly and like loud. Lean into that instead of trying to be like, I gotta have these. Like, there was a moment where I was trying to make like good points, and it's like, for what?
Yeah.
You're not a TED. This isn't a TED talk. You're a clown. Just fucking hump the stool like your instincts are telling you to do. But no, usually my therapist will laugh. And then, like, thankfully, I found somebody who's good enough to go, like, well, let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
Because it is like a defense mechanism to just go, like, ah, I gotta just kill myself. You know? But no, it's, I never work on bits. I have gotten bits in therapy just through the conversation.
Yeah. I feel like a good therapist, there was a couple I went through and they never remembered what we talked about. So it'd be like the same conversation. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here?
It's a nightmare. It's like, I don't want to keep telling you about the childhood trauma I filled you in on so we could get move forward. Yeah. And I had a therapist who was like really fun, but she was kind of cool and seemed more like a yes man. And I'm like, I didn't. It was very LA, and it made me realize, I think a lot of people in LA probably do go to therapy to be told that they're right. And it's like, oh, you treat like narcissists. And I was like, I'm not here to be told that, like, and there's probably some, you know, psychological digging that could be done to go like, oh no, I'm here to be told what's wrong with me. Like what?
Yeah.
To be like, hey, I want you to help me see my bullshit. But she's just like, no, I don't really think anything's wrong there. And I was like, that's for never. I'm never doing, I don't believe I'm never, it's never a little bit me.
Yeah. You know? Point at her, you're like, wait, I think you got a problem.
Yeah. I was like, are you even listening?
I think this is obviously
a great therapist.
Say again.
It's work finding a great therapist. Oh, like, you don't have to, like, and that's the thing. And that's a thing that I think it's important to like remind people, is that like, you know, it's not one size fits all. So if you go to therapist and you're like, this doesn't really feel like it's helping, it's not working, that doesn't mean therapy doesn't work. And maybe there is some other method or modality that will end up being better for you if you keep looking. But like, just because one therapist, you feel like they suck, that doesn't mean like, oh, therapy is garbage.
Yeah.
Which is important, because I think a lot of people, I tried it once. So, oh, well.
I feel like this is always talked about, like the funniest people always have like the darkest demons in there. Like, why is that a thing? Like you said, is it just a coping mechanism? Or
I think so. I think it's also like, if you are able or not able, if your brain functions in a place of darkness, you can either like, I don't know how to put together the sentence I'm trying to say. Sometimes things are so dark that like, well, you can either be miserable or you have to make your own light sometimes. Like sometimes things are so bad. There's no end in sight. Everything seems terrible. So like, if you're lucky, your brain can find a way to laugh at something that's terrible. And that's why I like, I'm not someone who's like, oh, this fucking PC culture bullshit, but it's real tiptoey when people go like, that's not a thing you should joke about. Like I've made like rape jokes. We can bleep that or whatever. I don't know what you need to do for your audience, but like trigger warning, but like, and I don't do it a lot on stage. I don't do it to be like shock value. I don't really do it on stage anymore at all. But it's like when people go like, you can't joke about that. It's like, don't you fucking tell someone else how to process their trauma?
Yeah.
Like
that's, if someone's laughing about it, then it's fine.
Yeah, I can. But like, you know, and obviously as a professional comedian, you assess what's working and what's not. And it's like, okay, well, at a certain point, if it's not working, you ideally quit doing it. But yeah, I worry when people with the like, don't say this, don't say that. And it's like, okay, well, don't, like some people are just trying to cope with their own existence.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I do think, I think there's definitely, there's a tie-in for, I mean, some comedians, it's just like, we're like ticking time bombs of like, oh, well, yeah, are they going to fucking, I don't know if you're going to make it.
The cancel like, culture life. Bomb.
Oh yeah, for sure. I just meant like, people can't talk out their demons.
Oh, right. Okay. Like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, no. And it's like, oh, everyone processes things differently. And I think I wouldn't be surprised to learn, like, I process things literally out loud. Do I need to do that on a stage? I mean, I could do some of it not. I'm here on a podcast.
But that's what works.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, no, there is a lot of like, but I think as a comedian, you're an observer and like as part of the job. And it's this like chicken and egg scenario of like, were you like this and you became a comedian? Does it, it probably makes you do it more, but you're, you know, you see the world in a lens that's like, you have to be aware of everything. I think if you're a good comedian, you try to stay like, you know, like open to different viewpoints of things.
Right.
So you kind of like, I mean, a lot of it is like seeing that there's a lot of trash in the world. Like just like shit kind of sucks sometimes.
Yeah. You gotta make it laugh. You gotta make people laugh.
Yeah. You gotta like find a way to laugh about it. Now, I think that is why.
So how did you get in stand-up comedy? You just like people tell you funny and you go up on stage. You just saw, did you do karaoke one day and you're like, you know what? I can make a fucking joke out of this.
Make a fucking joke. You know what? I was a weird ass kid. I was weird in middle school, kind of weird in high school.
Really?
And like people made fun of me because I'm like little and crazy and like would wear loud outfits. And so I had like bullies in high school. And I would always just like keep your blinders on, go to class, ignore it, just whatever. And then one day I just got sick of it. And instead of just keeping my thoughts to myself, I was like, oh, well, let's talk about you for a second.
Yeah.
If I'm such a piece of shit. And just like started just roasting people back and was infinitely better at it than they are. And I'm not a person who speaks confidently about anything I do, but that is one thing I'm sure of. And it was immediately like, oh, that's terrifying. She's so funny. And it was like a switch where people were like, I want to be your friend. Probably because they were like, please don't roast me. But like, I just became sort of the funny kid in class. I was like class clown by senior year is like what I was voted. And then I was the funny one in my group of friends in my like college. I was in a sorority and we did. I was in a sorority.
You're so basic.
I know. Like I'm a walking pumpkin spice, but I don't even like pumpkin spice, but I do good coconut milk latte. Anyway.
Very LA of you.
I know. It's like, there's just too much sugar in the pumpkins.
Oh my God. 17-year-old you would be pissed right now.
I know. I would fucking, I would literally probably just like hit me with a snowball. I don't know. Probably something worse. Yeah, no, I was just like funny. And I kept being like, well, I'm going to college, get a degree, but like, I want to be a comedian. At the time I was like, I want to be on Saturday Night Live. But I didn't know how to do that. So by my senior year, I finally was like, I should try something. And I did an open mic. And just like immediately when the first laugh I got, it was like a light switch went on. And I was like, this is my thing. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, which is nice because not everybody finds that right away. And it was just like, it's very woo-woo. And I know you're like Boston and probably think like, that's fucking stupid. But I was like, oh, I think I found my purpose. Like, I was like, I think I'm supposed to be doing this. And then just hit the ground running.
I think what's stupid is that I don't see you coming to Boston for any shows.
Okay. What's stupid is like, what the fuck is the deal with your clubs there? Like, sorry, I'm not big enough to play the Wilbur, but if anyone wants to follow me on Instagram and change that, that'd be great. But like all the comedy clubs I know of there, a lot of times they're like, I'm at a level. I'm at the bottom of the top. Like, I've made it in terms of like, I do all my income is from stand-up comedy. Really, really deep comedy nerds know me because they've heard me on some other bigger comedians podcast. It's like this trickle down, but I'm not a name. So every club I've reached out to there will just be like, oh, well, I don't know. Fuck
no
off.
Shit. I like,
just kidding. I want to come there.
Dude, come there. It's funny. I like when people know the Wilbur. So it is kind of like well known.
Yeah, no, it's so well known, but it's that. And then like, I mean, what comedy clubs do you go to? Because the only one I know of is like Nick's Comedy Stop. And they're like, well, we book locals. And I'm like, I guess you do. You could just say, fuck you. You're abroad. You're not funny. But like, yeah,
come
I don't
on,
know. So
come on and just do some open mics.
Independent venue. Oh, yeah, that
would be fun.
Is a great idea.
That's weird.
There's a time I would have. And now I'm just like, I can't. Oh, my. I'm not above open mics, but I make money at the store. I'm not going to leave that behind.
No. And I saw that little Instagram post you had. Your name is like right on the outside there.
Oh, it's great. I got prime real estate. You don't get to pick. They just like paint you when you get paid. You become a paid regular.
No shit.
Like, am I eventually going to be washed away by hobos pissing there? Probably.
Yeah.
But for now, it's a nice little. And I always like move the signs out of the way to be like, that's my name, which is ridiculous, but whatever.
Essica. You're like, where did Jay go?
I'm like, hey. Fix it. I will come in with my own whiteout and fix it if I have to.
Mentally, how is it bombing? If you've bombed before, maybe you haven't.
Oh, I've bombed.
How is that?
It's painful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you could have 8 good sets in a row where you crush and the crowd chants your name and they carry you on your shoulders and then you bomb and you're like, I should quit.
Yeah.
Like it like literally is this immediately like, wee. That's the thing is like, you're constantly riding an emotional roller coaster as a stand-up comedian, which does probably make it hard to try to get healthy, but it's also like probably some people get into it because they love riding that roller coaster.
Yeah.
I thankfully hit a place where I no longer go, I'm not funny. I'm worthless. I should kill myself. I just go like, all right, they weren't feeling me. And there is room to go like, all right, what did I do wrong? What could I do better? But a lot of times it's like you assess it and you go, that just wasn't that crowd. Like, especially when I talk about mental health, it's like, sometimes it's like crickets because people are too in the like, oh, they think it's a cry for help, which I make jokes about that. It's like, I'm not going to blow my head off on stage. You guys, this is just a bit, but like, then sometimes it fucking crushes.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you just go, oh, this isn't for everyone. And I got to be okay with that. But like the people it's for are going to love it.
This crowd, sometimes there's a crowd of people suck.
Yeah. Sometimes the crowd, I mean, that's a real thing is that like, I like to believe is like, yeah, I can get them on board most of the time. Like I'll go to something. I'll go to the old hits or whatever, you know, the stuff that you know works, but like some crowds do suck. And even if they're enjoying the show, it's just like the energy's weird.
It's people feed off other people's energy. You can see some guy like crossing his arms and not laughing. Like, hey, he's onto something.
Yeah, and then there's people who all of a sudden are like hyper aware of the other people, and then they're like, oh, if they see me laugh at that, are they gonna think I'm a bad person?
Yeah.
And like
just bullies again, getting bullied.
It's the worst.
And then just
it's
fucking...
like when everyone's just invested and they're like, whatever happens here, I'm here to laugh. Oh, well. But sometimes you get people who are like, well, who are you? What's going on?
But you flipped it at one point. Your first comedy album was considered for a Grammy, right?
Yeah, I got on like the first round nomination list before they picked the like final five. But it was like, I'm like, all right, well, Patton Oswalt, I think, got the Grammy that year. So it's like, well, I was among them. And it's like, yeah, you just kind of learn to lean into who you are. And I think
that's fucking awesome. It's like NCAA bracket. You maybe like the 11th seed and you were trying to get by.
Yeah. And it's cool because I'm like effectively nobody in comedy.
No, and you were number, dude, you were number one on iTunes. That can't be fucking
even more
easy.
So then, well, yeah, no, it's cool going like, oh, because you go out, you do your set, but you're like, does anyone care? Did they laugh, but they're not going to remember my name? Or like, you know, and you see your social media start to grow a little bit and you're like, oh, okay, like people are following me, but like, is it because I post pictures of my butt and not because I'm funny? Not that I'm posting
funny
a very
butts.
Gross butt and it's like a funny butt. But every once in a while, the pictures are like, my butt's too good. I got to stop posting these pictures. I'm just kidding. That's coffee and mania talking. But yeah, having that happen, you go like, oh, okay. I'm not in there. I'm not. It's a nice little like validation mostly to go like, oh, I'm not a psychopath in terms of like, I mean, you see people who go up at open mics for years and are terrible. And you're like, what are you?
Yeah, it's funny.
And then you go like, what if I'm not funny? And I think I'm funny and I'm doing the same thing. And then something like that makes you go, oh, okay, I'm fine. I'm okay.
I would love to see the, like, how did someone contact you and who contacted you about that Grammy thing?
It gets submitted. You have like, if you have a, like the, someone in the Academy has to submit you.
Gotcha.
So like there's managers, agents, record execs and stuff, and people join the Academy. And like, someone submitted me. You submit.
That's fucking awesome.
And then they make the cuts and then they're like, here's the people you can vote on. So
that's something you should be super proud of. That's fucking cool as shit.
I am. And there's moments where like, it's such a thing where when you're like chasing a dream, after a while, everything just becomes like, okay, what's next? There's too much like, what's next?
Yeah.
And I do have to take moments and go like, oh, this is an achievement. Like, that's a big deal. Like, you just get like jaded and like, yeah, whatever. Is the next one going to be number one? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's and it might not be.
That's what I was going to ask. Are you scared about living up to that album?
I mean, I'm not worried about the content living up to it. I'm proud of this album. I'm proud of the jokes on it. I know it's a good album. But yeah, when you're like, it was number one. And like, I'm not a big TV person. I'm too dirty for pretty much any late night set. So like, I don't have like mainstream type of credits. I go like The Tonight Show. And it's like, I had a number one album. And then like, so that's, I'm very, but like for the first few years afterwards, my number one album, you know? So now it's like, oh, are people gonna notice? But it's like, no, whatever. People are going to not be my fan if they're like, she's not number one. She should kill herself. I'm blocking her, you know?
I only listen to albums that are number one on the iTunes charts. It's the only thing I do. Now, Horny for Death. Talk about the name behind that. What was, the reasoning behind that name?
I mean, I'm trying to think if it's in the, no, it's not. I was going to say, if you pre-order right now, you get one sample track. And I'm like, is the joke in there? But like, it's actually a line I took from another joke that's not on the album, but then applied it to a joke about like being choked. So it's a joke about being like choked sexually.
Yeah. That's new like, in the streets, I hear.
I mean, it's a big one. And I talk about like, does that actually make you come harder? Or are we all just so excited to die that we're like, oh my God, I'm horny for death. But like it started as me being like talking about my rheumatoid arthritis and getting really dark and being like, I wouldn't say I'm suicidal so much as I'm just like horny for death. Like just come take me. But it's a phrase that resonated with me. And even though it's silly, it's like, I think there is something to like those moments of just being like, yeah, I don't want to kill myself, but like, yeah, I'd love to not be around at this moment when it's painful.
I absolutely love that. That's like the perfect thing. It's like, yeah, I like getting choked because I just want to see how it would be. Just the little,
just like,
the white light.
Yeah, just like, you want to get right there where you're like, the angels. And then you come and you're like, oh.
The devil.
And you're like, I'm still alive? Like, I only came because I thought it was over.
That is fucking awesome. I love that. I'm stealing that and being like, I'm just kidding. You go listen to Jessica's album.
As long as you tell them to go listen to my album afterwards.
I will. And it's going to be on October 1st and you can get it on the app. So now would that album be on Spotify too? Like how
it'll
does
be
that?
It'll be everywhere. Yeah.
Okay.
It goes everywhere. So like you can pre-order right now on Amazon Music and
you can get it.
And you might be able to pre-save it on Spotify, I think. And you'll get like one free track, but it'll drop everywhere. On the 1st, it's going to be wherever you download music for everyone listening. Download, listen to music. It's going to be there. I think it's going to be on SiriusXM, probably on the Raw Dog channel because that's the dirty channel. And I'm disgusting.
Dirty person.
I'm filthy. And that was the thing too, is that I tried for like a while to be like, I'm going to do all clean comedy. And I wrote some great jokes that I was like, oh, these are good clean jokes that I could use somewhere. But like the core of who I am is someone who can't go an hour without bringing up cum in some form.
Yeah,
or
I'm the and same like, I don't way. Know.
Yeah. So now, if you like dirty comedy, you'll like it.
Do you hate it when someone meets you and they're like, oh, I'm a comic. They're like, tell me a joke.
Oh, it's the fucking war. Like I used to think in no other profession do people ask you to do your job for free. But then I remembered like, I know people who are doctors and I'm sure people are just like, can you look at this mole or whatever? And you're like, what do you know? I'm a pediatrician. Get away from me. But like, yeah, it's very strange when people are like, tell me a joke, like prove that you can do your job right now in front of me for free. And I'm like, give me $100 and I will do a joke for you.
Now go sit over there.
Yeah. Sit. You have to order two drinks.
Minimum.
Yeah, two drink minimum.
Holy shit. Are you scared of cancel culture?
In ways, yes. I don't like that I notice myself tiptoeing around some things, because that's not what made me good at comedy, was just saying things that you're like, oh, you're not supposed to say that. But like, it's one of those things where I go like, are there people who are beyond it because they're already established so they can say everything? But like, at the end of the day, most comedians who get canceled don't really get canceled. They just like maybe get a different audience. But it's like, I maintain that the majority of comedians who've been canceled by, like, you know, Twitter goes after them and then like maybe their agent drops them. It's like, yeah, but those were a bunch of people who were never your fans anyways. Like, most people aren't losing fans unless they've like murdered, like sexual assault, like that kind of stuff. Maybe like the people are going, I'm not going to support their work anymore. But like, for something you say, most comedians, it's just like, yeah, no, people are going to be like, yeah, no, that's what they do. If you already have fans, they're not going to be like shocked by it.
Right. And that's how, like, that's how I feel like Joey Diaz still keeps going. He just doesn't give a fuck.
And yeah, and he just was like, fuck you, when they tried to cancel him. And everyone's like, well, yeah, that's, of course, Joey Diaz said, fuck you.
Now, what about, I always pronounce his name wrong, but the Tony Heathcliff? Like, his incident was kind of bad, right?
I know that Tony will never hear this, but I'm dying thinking about him being like, how does he not know my name?
I see it and I just say something different. It's like when I see
Tony Hinchcliffe. Well, that's the thing, is that like, someone put out the video that, this was like a big issue to me, that like, I didn't see enough comedians commenting on, like, on social media when it happened, but like the comedian who opened for Tony put out that clip. And my instinct was like, not a good look, Tony. But also,
yeah,
why are you filming another comedian's set? What the fuck is wrong with you? You know what I mean? It's like this like weird internal ethics code of like, what? And apparently, I'm not defending the context of this video.
Yeah.
What he did, I was like, fuck, Tony. Yeah. Come on. But apparently the part you don't see is like, that comedian, I could be remembering this wrong because somebody told me, I didn't watch it, but like that comedian going on stage and like making all those jokes, and Tony was made the choice to be like absurdly offensive, to be like, fuck this guy, which was a choice. And like his agents dropped him. People were like, he's canceled. But like, Tony wasn't a TV comic anyways. Tony became Tony because of Kill Tony. Like, he's written for roasts, and like he has this podcast where what he does is like say offensive shit to new comedians trying material.
Yeah.
So even though like now he no longer has this big agent who's probably booking his clubs, if he shows up at a club, people are still coming out.
Yeah.
And the like, thing is, when you get canceled, if you like just lean into it and go, fuck you, I'm going to say what I'm going to say, you'll sometimes gain more fans. Now, are they the kind of fans you want? I don't know. Like, I believe in free speech, but I don't know how much I want to hang out with people whose whole personality is free speech. You know, like, where's the slippery slope into you being like a QAnon crazy person? And you're like, the vaccine is a hoax. And I'm like, ah, but like, he's still going to work, you know, and there's going to be comedians who hate him and never work with him out of they're actually offended. There's people who are going to just stop working with you because I don't want to get canceled too. I mean, I was on his podcast and my episode hadn't come out, and like it came out after, and like I get a lot of followers from it. They're like nice people who come and start commenting on your Instagram. Like, oh, you were so funny on this thing. But I got like, do I share it? Do I not share it?
Oh, that's right.
And I had like a wholesome TV thing that for some fucking reason was looking at me at the time. So like, I like didn't retweet it like I normally would. Cause it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't care. But like, now am I going to mess up my own money if I like, and it's fucked. Cause you're like, I mean like, hey, whatever. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I don't know what to do. And you just get like scared.
Yeah.
It is. But he's like now with Rogan, like he's opening shows with Rogan now too. And like, cause I'm like, oh, Rogan took down the poster. And it's like, yeah, you just let it cool down. And it's, that's the thing is, Twitter makes you feel like Twitter is not the world. And it's important to remember that, because like, if you spend too much time on there, you're like, oh,
cancel this. It's a wild, wild west.
Terrible. But like, most people aren't even on Twitter. So it's like, okay, well, you could just get people on Twitter don't like you, but who cares if you're working? I don't know. And but then me saying this, someone's gonna go, she said that what? Yeah. Someone's gonna take all this and go, she said that she's proud of what he said. And it's like, no, that's not. I thought it was a fucking not a great move, not a great look. Pretty shitty. Don't do that.
The clip of this episode to promote it is gonna be that. I'm gonna chop it up. Gonna,
me going, I support racism.
Yep.
And there you go. There you got your clip. And I don't.
But Tony's great. He's a wrestling fan. So shout outs to him, even though I can't pronounce his last name.
For the four store horsemen. That was, he had a wrestling podcast for a while.
Oh, okay. I thought you were messing up that name for a second. I was like, hold on.
No, it was called the Store Horsemen. It was comics from the store.
Okay. The cool thing about comics too, I've noticed, is all the established ones, I feel like are tight knit. Like a lot of them probably supported him. I see, cause I tried a little bit with like open mics, but like, the come up, everyone's kind of out for each other. There's like no support, like laughs are currency.
Yeah. And then it's like, it's so weird. Cause I noticed that like you almost get sort of low key inducted into this group of like I thought I was a Comedy Store comic before I was passed. I was like, this is my home. They give me spots. I'm funnier. Everyone's, you know, fairly polite to me, but for some reason, like, and that says a lot at the Comedy Store, because I think their culture for years was like, door guys bully everyone who tries to do stand up. People are mean to you. You're a piece of shit. And that's how you get tough or whatever.
Yeah, but
like,
yeah.
As soon as I got past, it was like the way some of these bigger comedians like treated me, and they were never rude to me, but all of a sudden it's like, oh, you'll have a full on conversation. That it's like, Bill Burr knows my name, and like, he'll see me when he gets off stage. It's real. Like this happened the other night where he got off stage after crushing, and I was just in the back watching in a booth, of course. And he comes out and everyone's like watching him. Like, there goes Bill Burr. And he stops. It's like, hey Jess, how are you? Oh, good to see you. How you been? And now everyone's looking at me like, well, who's that?
Yeah.
Who's she? And it's like, and I'm just going, oh my God, he still remembers my name, but trying to play it cool. Like, yeah, man, just chilling. How are the, how's the kid? How are the kids? And in my mind, I'm like, it's Bill Burr.
It's like, Bill, you playing the Wilbur? Do you need an opening set?
You need an open? Okay. I have one person in Boston who told me to come out there. So people are really asking for it.
I'll be out there just cheering with a big sign.
Yeah. He's like, who's this fucking loser?
Who's this fucking guy?
Yeah.
Now let's translate over to this. I know we talked about him before this, and I feel like we talked about suicide a lot. But another guy from there, Brody Stevens. Yeah.
Love dude. Him.
Yeah. So do you have any good stories about him?
I mean, I don't have any stories.
Before we go further, people that don't know Brody Stevens, he was like a comics comic, right? You would say
he's very much a comics comic. He closed out the main room a lot, like, which was, you know, everyone called it the Sam Kinison spot, even though Sam Kinison actually mostly closed out the OR. But it's like this big spot where, like, it's the end of the night. You are the closer of what's supposed to be the greatest comedy show on the Sunset Strip. You know what I mean? The greatest comedy club in the world. You have to bring like a really unique and special energy. And he was magical. Like, he just was like silly. He would do crazy things. But he had these like just funny like dad puns. He'd come out like drumming. He did high kicks. He was just fun. And it was like watching Brody wasn't just watching a comedy set. It was like an experience.
Yeah.
And he had like little catchphrases that would always come back up. And he's one of the comedians. Yeah. When you say comedians, you know, a comics comic, we're all in the back of the room. We're like, Brody's up. Let's go watch.
Yeah. 'Cause
you never know what's going to happen. If he's going to just like lose it on an audience member because their arms are crossed, like arms crossed negative. And just, he was very special.
Yeah.
And I wish I had like a specific, nothing's coming. Like, there's so many of them. And now, I mean, most of Brody and I's magical moments were in the back patio of the Comedy Store. One time we got in like this, I don't know how it happened, but we were just like shouting medications at each other in the back of the parking lot about like medications we'd taken, which is a very Brody thing to do.
Yeah. So people that don't know, Brody Stevens ended his life by suicide. And I resonated with him a little bit, cause I'm a bald guy with a little bit of a beard, and we both took Lamictal, which is on, and just reading about him, like, always bummed me out. Cause he was a comic that I always loved to see and I never did. So that was a big bummer when I heard about that.
Yeah, it was really sad. And like, he was constantly like, You could see, I mean, this is morbid and dark, but Ian Edwards, when it happened, of course, like everyone who knew him was, you know, posting and sharing memories and whatever. Like, this is dark, but I think anyone who like knows someone who is like deeply struggling, like Brody would say things like positive energy. Yes. Positive push. And when you look back, you really think like that was for him. Like that was him being like, come on, man, keep going. And Ian Edwards, I thought, had the most like, I mean, it was heartbreaking, but poignant post where he was like, you know, like Brody really hung around as long as he could because he was like struggling.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm going to cry through my Adderall. And that says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it was like an uphill battle for him. I mean, what really put him on the map in a big way was when Comedy Central did Enjoy It. And it was like about his mental health struggle. And it was like very real and raw. And like, he's just one of those people where you're always like, yeah, just every day you're like, I hope he makes it through, you know? And it was hard, you know, for that to happen. And then there is the like, you know, a million thoughts of like, you know, natural grief cycle. What could I have done? What could I, but it's like, I don't know. I think most of us who knew him just feel grateful that we like got the experience. Cause he's like, it's like, he's an energy, you know? And it sometimes feels like it's very corny and again, woo woo in LA, but like there's times where it's like, you feel like you can feel him there with you. Yeah. I swear to God, this happened a couple of weeks ago. And Jeremy Scipio, who's a door guy at the Comedy Store. No, it was Jeffrey Baldinger, who is a great comedian as well. And is the pianist at the Comedy Store. We were talking because he and I were on actually like Brody's podcast together. A couple weeks before Brody took his life, and this other guy, Chad, popped in. But Jeffrey and I, we like wrote a musical together. We're like, he's very funny. We're like good friends, working partners. And we were talking about Brody, and like, I like did something with my leg. I don't know what I did, like kicked my leg out or something as I'm talking to Jeffrey. And like, I swear to God, like I turned and I was like, I'm so sorry. Cause I thought I had kicked someone. There was nobody there, but I like felt, and I was like, oh my God, he's here. He knows we're talking about him, which is very like probably just coping with your own, you know, ways of coping with death. But no, Brody was magical. And that one really hurt like the whole store. I mean, that was like a loss you felt. Cause he was like the guy that closed the main room. They're like, they call it the Brody spot now.
That's cool.
And you go like, who's going to fucking fill those shoes? And it's nuts.
Yeah. You got to come with the heat. Yeah. I feel like comics are the toughest to read. Cause you guys are so funny. You're like, oh, they're fucking happy. Don't worry about it. They're like, fine. Oh shit.
Well, yeah, and everyone thinks that like, oh, for some reason doing comedy, not for some reason, I guess if I really thought about it, it would make sense. But people are like, oh, you're so brave. So it's just for getting up there. And like, so like people just think like, well, this person is, they'll think things through and they have, you know, they have all their friends they can call. And it's just those things were like, it fucking happens. I mean, like comedians, I would say it's probably like at a higher percentage rate than a lot of other professions. You're going to see suicides, but it's like, I don't know. It kind of taught me more than anything that, you know, you can go the route of going, I need to be on defense, try to like save all my friends, which you're not going to be able to do. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah.
Most of the time when it happens, there's not going to, it's going to like, for some people, especially like with bipolar, like it comes on so quickly that it's like, boom, 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 I'm out of here, you know? Cause it can just like in a moment, you're just in such a deep spiral. But, and I've learned to be very grateful for the time I have with everyone I love and just try like, and that's not to come back to meditation again, but like learning to be present and like enjoy the moment instead of worrying about where's this going? What's it going to be? When are we going to do this thing? It's just like, be here now and like cherish this thing. Cause at some point this is going to be, you know, you don't know how many of those things you have.
That's what I do every time I say goodbye to somebody. I always say, I love you. And like, people think I'm kidding, but like, if something ever happened to me, they'll be like, oh, the last thing Tim said to me was, I love you. So like, that's my big thing. Like I'll say it to my friends and they're like, I'll do it. And like, I'll be like, I love you and hang up. They're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, I do too. I actually somewhere on a very like sad muffled clip on my computer that I saved. So I was the last person who brought Brody on stage. Wasn't supposed to be his last set, but he didn't, you know, he like didn't show up. And it's the main room. And I would always tell Brody I love him. And like, I like most comics, like video recorder, they audio record in their, you know, phone. And I had a video prop, but like my friend Nicole, who's OCD and very efficient, my set was over, so she took it down, which took me a minute to be like, I really wish I had the fucking, but like in my pocket. He comes on stage and I hugged him and I was like, I love you. And he had never done this before. So like, it's almost like you look back and you go, oh, there were like little things. Like, yeah. And he goes, I love you too. And I was like, I got off stage. I was like, finally happened.
Yeah.
Brody finally loves me.
Got it.
Yeah. But it's like, you just never know, you know? And like, you can't be worried about like, it's easier said than done. You can't be worried about like what you say, like getting someone through a thing. It's just like, just, you gotta just like share what's in your heart and like know that you put it out there.
Listen to your heart.
When she's calling for you.
Sing like
unless
an angel.
It's telling you to hang in the closet and then maybe take a step back.
Just get out of the way.
Listen to your meds. No.
You do a country song on that.
I have a country song.
I know. I looked it up. I was hoping to segue into that. It's pretty funny. It's like, is it, at first I was like, I don't know if she's being dead ass serious, but then like I heard like
it's
talking
so
about
funny. It's like silly
blue balls.
Yeah. Like it wasn't supposed to be like, I wanted to write a country song and I was like, I don't want it to be musical comedy, but I'm okay if it's funny. But I was like, very like, I want to make sure that when I put this out, I go, this is a country song. I am not a musical comedian. I'm a comedian who also likes to do music. There's plenty of really great musical comedians probably somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, as like, that's not, I don't want people to think I'm going to start singing songs on stage because I'm probably not during my comedy act. I mean, sometimes I've like done bits where I sing a little, but like, yeah, no, I just wanted to write something. And I took a little nugget of like truth in my life to start it. And then it just turned into this sort of story. I sat down with my boyfriend's a musician and he has a friend who's a really incredible producer. So he set up a meeting with all three of us. And I came with just the nugget of, all I brought to the table at first was wine, Winona, and whiskey. I was like, I think there's somebody to that because it's like you drink wine, get a little drunk, turn Winona, then it's fucking sad. And you're like, I got to drink something harder. And so from that, we made a whole song about a woman effectively killing her boss and going to prison. But
the typical love story.
Of course.
When I went to your website, it said country star. And I was like, wait, I don't know if she's fucking with me. And I looked it
the
up.
The country star thing is me fucking with you.
So I listened to it and it was the only song. I was like, where's like the album?
I know. It's funny. Like that I just like. I mean, I don't know if it's funny, but I was like, I'm going to lean into it.
I think, keep going, sorry.
No. Just because a couple people are like, oh, country star. And I'm like, I'm literally just going to call myself that and have people secretly be like, this woman's, it's like, is it less delusional if you're in on it? I don't know. If they're like, she's nuts. She calls herself a country star. She put out one song. And I'm like, no, I know I'm kidding. Whatever.
I feel like you have the recipe. There's a recipe for every country song and you have the whiskey part. There's like tractors, there's fucking heartbreak. There's always
heartbreak,
like
there's prison.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Boots.
Yeah.
Fucking everything. They're like, I got my blue jeans on and my cowboy boots. Like that's like every song.
Yeah, it's literally like every song. It's like, well, I grew up listening to it. So like even in the session where my boyfriend was, yeah, he's like an incredible musician, but he's always played, you know, he's like in an alt rock band. And so he's trying to like add things and he'd be like, well, we should do it more like this. And I was like, no. If there's one thing I know, it is trashy country. Trust me on this. And his producer backed me up. He's like, no, she knows what she's talking about. He's like, there's a system.
And I'm now, like, do you like old country or do you like this new, like fucking like Morgan Wallen, like on a boat type shit?
I love old country.
Okay.
I'll be honest. Did like Morgan Wallen. And then I was like, oh, he's canceled. I guess I'm fucking done with that. Like I like what I like about country is the storytelling. So like, I hate a lot of the new country that's like,
bro-y.
It's like tequila shots. We're taking, you know, tequila. But when it's like, oh, there's a story about like, I loved you, but then you moved away and you like chased a dream and I missed you. Like, I like the fucking dude. It's I think I just like the sad shit. Where you're like,
I'm gonna give you somebody to listen to when you're done with this. Is Lenny Lashley, Gang of One. He's part of. I don't know if you've heard of the Street Dogs. They're a punk band, but he had like his own country album. And it's pretty good. So.
Lenny Lashley.
Lashley. He's from Boston. Okay. So I'll give you someone. And he's good. He sounds like old country, like almost like Hank Williams type shit.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Like I like outlaw country too. Tyler Childers right now is who I'm obsessed with. And he's well known among country fans, but he's not a country radio guy because he just talks about like getting too fucked up on like cocaine and I don't know.
It's the type of music I want to hear.
Yeah, no, it's great. He's great. Check him out.
All right, well, let's finish with this because, again, I love stand-up comedy. So this is kind of a two-part question.
Okay.
Who got you into stand-up? Like, is there any specific comic? And then two, I want to know your personal Mount Rushmore of comics. It doesn't have to be like, oh, Richard Pryor and like this. It's like your personal top four plus the person that got into you stand-up. Like, what would it be?
The person who got me into stand-up. If you saw, I don't think anyone,
tough question. I love it. Look at me. 2010 minutes. Hard hitting questions.
Carlin, probably.
Love it.
Which is
Rufus.
Yeah. Which is really ridiculous when you see my comedy and I'm like talking about queefing. I'm like, yeah, he just knew what was up. It was just like my mom used to watch comedy when I was a kid. Like, she tried to take us to George Carlin. She got tickets, and I was like 9
Holy
right
shit.
After my dad left. And they were like, you're not going to bring her in here. And then she like left me. It was at a casino. She like left me at the like kids drop-off place and took my brother in, who was only 2 years older than me. And George Carlin literally was like, what the fuck is wrong with you, lady? Like, he crowd worked her. He's like, who the fuck brings a kid to my show? But like, whatever. So I think just seeing his stand-up kind of got the like idea of stand-up in my head, like seeing it on, you know, whatever fucking special I watched.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
then you Mount Rushmore, personal Mount Rushmore,
my personal Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. It could be as of like last week. This doesn't have to be like all time, but let's go all time.
Some of these names are not quite household names. So I need you guys to know that.
This is perfect. So that's like when you buy an album of a band and at the end they give like credits to other bands that you don't know of. And that's how you find them. So I like that.
Yeah. So I'll start with the ones that are maybe more known. So this is what, 4 on Mount Rushmore. Okay. So Dave Attell, definitely up there. Fahim Anwar is one of the funniest people on the fucking planet.
I'll have to check him out.
Don't know him. Look him up. He's like silly and goofy and like just, he's just the best. This is someone who's more like at my level as well. There's a Canadian comedian named Steph Tolev, T-O-L-E-V, and I piss my pants every time she's on stage. And she fucking kills it at like TikToks too, which usually sometimes it's like one or the other, but like she just fucking does these crazy characters and it's the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. And then I'm trying to think of someone who's like bigger that I would also put up there. I mean, it's like Bill Burr.
Yeah.
Yeah, Burr.
Guy's fucking, he's the best. I love him too.
But a close behind that is a lesser name, a guy named Jamar Neighbors, who he's a Comedy Store regular. And like, sometimes his sets are really hit or miss, but he's just so fucking fearless and off the wall and does like the craziest shit that like, he's someone, it's very comic. He's like Brody. Now, like you come in the room to see him. Like,
yeah, hopefully Brody comes by and kicks you in the shin for not putting him on there.
I know, sorry, Brody. Brody, too. I felt like that would be too corny.
No, it's all right. It's fine. It's totally fine.
I forgot about Robin Williams, but then he got accused of stealing jokes. It's a whole thing. It's so complicated.
There was a thing that I read about. They would put on a light for when the comics had like a couple minutes left, but then they'll put on a different light when Robin Williams was in the crowd. Was that, do you know if that was true or not?
I don't know if that was true. I have heard that. And it's just because he like, I'm so sorry. There's like a plane or like a tractor going by. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, a country song getting written right now.
Yeah. There was a thing where like, apparently, because he was just blowing up. And so he'd be on the Tonight Show every week and like, he was taking jokes and there's a debate over like some of it was probably subconscious because he was like stream of conscious and like going so fast. But it hit a point where like allegedly, this is all stories I've heard.
Yeah.
He was confronted about it so much, you know, and like People were like, fuck you, got his ass kicked. He just like started offering. This is what I've been told, is if you'd see someone do a joke, he'd go up, he would go up to them with his checkbook and be like, can I buy that joke from you for the Tonight Show?
No shit.
So like, it's this, what should be like a huge blemish on someone's character. Obviously, if you're stealing jokes, you're a fucking piece of shit. It's hard because it's Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, he fuck was it. My TV, like my movie dad, you know, it's like, yeah. I grew up on him. And he got, maybe it's like, it was all a pathway for him to get to acting or whatever, but it's like still so funny. That's like the fucked up thing is like, it's not like he was unfunny taking jokes to become someone else. It's like, he was really funny and occasionally threw in a joke that had been written by somebody else.
Yeah.
Also really bad, not good. But it's interesting what we like do with our heroes.
Luckily, Joe Rogan wasn't around. Oh, fuck, man.
That fucking just punch Robin Williams in the face.
Yeah, his hair would have fell right off on his arms.
You know what I think is like the difference with that is I think Robin Williams like owned up to it and felt bad about it. Whereas Carlos Mencia was like, fuck you, I'm the greatest. Still works all over, by the way. Nobody gives a fuck about integrity if they're already like fans of you. It's
yeah,
crazy.
That's one of the best videos I've seen. And we were talking about him earlier. Was Steve Razzanini was in the background when they were talking outside when they continued that conversation in that video.
Oh yeah, no, I haven't watched the video in so long that I don't know if I. It was like pre being a comedian when I saw that. I think, God, I got to go back and watch that. Steve's right. The best. Well, that's the thing about the store. It's like a family and. For the most part, people like back you up and they look out for you, which is nice.
I'm going to come out there and pee on your name from outside to make sure the Jess.
I will have the bouncer beat the shit out of you, but I highly encourage it. Everyone come pee on my name.
What's next for you?
Just dropping this album on the 1st and got a lot of touring going on. I'm going to Grand Rapids, Michigan on September 16th through the 18th. I'm doing a show in Philly at the end of the month. I'm doing a show in Raleigh. I'm taking a family trip to Hawaii, not my family, because we would never do that, but my boyfriend's family, who's a group of nice people. That's nice. Going to be fun. Then I'm going to see my family in Las Vegas.
Jesus, you're all over the map.
Yeah, and a lot more shows at the end of... I'm doing Skankfest in Houston, which is Luis J. Gomez and Big J. Okerson's festival.
Okay.
But Big J is so funny, too. He's definitely up there.
God, is he still rocking fingerless gloves?
I think so. Here's a fucked up thing. For a little while, I was having arthritis flare-ups really bad in my hands, so I had to get compression gloves, and I was wearing them out because my hands could not function and they're fingerless, and multiple comedians called me Little J. Okerson, and I was like, can we not? Like, this is not a fashion choice. This is, and now I'm going, maybe he actually has inflammation and doesn't talk about it, but I think it's definitely a choice with him. He's like a leather daddy.
I definitely want to come out to LA and go there because it's a legendary. And we got to get you out to Boston. I see that you come to Buffalo. I'm like, I'm debating. I'm like, do I have to fucking drive to Buffalo to see her live?
Okay, here's what. If you want to see me in your town, so you, but anyone listening who's like, I want to see this, go to the comedy club. And like, sometimes they have comic cards on the table during shows you can write people on. But just go up and like talk to the staff or send them a Facebook message and be like, how do I get this person here? Like, I want to see XYZ because it's silly. But it helps because they go, oh, this person has fans. And like, even if they don't run out and book me because one person said it, if the next time I reach out to that club and I'm like, hey, hi, this is who I am. I would love to come to your club. They go, wait a second. People have been saying her name here. Let's get her out here. Let's like, people want to see her. So like, it's all guerrilla marketing.
I will make about 20 different email addresses and start sending them one by one.
And then I come out and you're the only person in the crowd. And they're like,
and you better not charge me because I'm not paying fucking $20, all right?
No, you can have... I'll get you in. I'll get you on the guest list of the store, too, if you come out to LA.
All right, perfect. I definitely want to come out there. Now, two more questions for you, then I can stop chewing your ear off. If you were, like, a professional wrestler, boxer, fucking MMA star, and you came out...
I'd be a wrestler, a diva, for sure, but go ahead.
Yeah. And when you're coming out... You probably get it out anyways when you come out to the stage. What song would be playing for you?
You know, I think I'd have to go with like Bang Bang by Jesse J. That like bang bang into.
I know
the
that jam.
I think that's fun. I think that's a good song to come out to. And I think it's like high energy because I imagine if I was a wrestler, an MMA person, I would definitely be like, I don't think I'm a heel. I think bang, I'm like bang. Very just like hype up. I don't know. I think I'd be like a non-arrogant, but with the same energy as Chris Jericho, but without the narcissism. That sort of, like, I think I'd be, I don't know.
You got early 2000s Jericho hair.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, I think maybe I'm just seeing my own hair in the Zoom. And I'm like, it's like Edge and Christian. Like, who is she? I loved Lita when I used to, like, she was like the best to me.
Every girl did.
Yeah. And I was like, there's all these big titty Trish Stratuses. And I was like, no, I want to be her. I want to be like jumping off the ladders. And now I'm arthritic. And I'm like, I'd have to be like, lift me up to the ring in full body padding. Like, don't hurt me.
Your body is like a 50-year-old wrestler.
It is. No, it's like I did all those things, but just didn't. But my body is fucked up anyways. I feel like I have the body of Mick Foley. Like, just
wearing sweatpants all the time.
Cables.
Barely,
yeah.
Barely
yeah.
moving.
Yeah, just like, I don't even think my neck moves anymore.
I love how you know your wrestling shit. That fucking, I'm even that more was, of a fan.
What was his book? Smile. Yeah, he had a book that came out in like 2000.
Have a nice day.
Have a nice day. Yes. I was like, smile more. that was like the only thing I wanted for Christmas that year. I was like, I want to have a nice day. And I fucking binged it. I loved it. I fell off the wagon with wrestling. I have no idea who's good
sucks.
Now and what the stories are, but
sucks.
Man,
now.
For that period in time. That's a great belt. That's a great belt. Look at you.
Look
world
at
champion.
Everyone look at me. World champion of 20-minute interviews. This has gone way over 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you failed big time on this one, but what can you do?
Three things that you're grateful for, and then we'll say goodbye.
Three forever. Things I am grateful for.
Yep.
The ability to laugh at really bad things. I think it's a gift. I think some people can't do it. So I'm grateful that I have that. I am grateful for the mobility my body still has. And I'm grateful. You know what? This is going to be an eye roll for some people, but after the fucking year we've had, but I'm actually really grateful for Zoom. There's so many like podcasts and things where I've met like such cool people. Like, this is great that I wouldn't have fucking met you. And also yeah. my podcast, I refused to do anything not in person until this happened. And I was like, I just got to fucking learn how to do that. Like, I'm grateful for technology.
Yeah.
What a gift.
Zoom, zoom, what zoom in your room, room.
That's right.
That's a
or
fucking
your closet or attic or wherever you are.
Yeah. I'm not getting out of here. This is where I live now. October 1st, Horny for Death, Jessica Michelle Singleton. Thank you so much for chatting with me. This has been
Thanks,
a lot
Tim.
Of fun.
Thanks for having me.
Hey,
appreciate it.
I love you.
I love you too.
Have
Are you talking
one.
To me?
Oh. I'm talking to everybody listening and then maybe you, okay? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. If you are feeling suicidal, please dial 911.